This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. This is the final in a series we are running in the last week of the year where we look at some of the prevailing themes of 2021. There's no denying that after almost 2 years of living with COVID-19, it has taken its toll on our personal lives and also many businesses. But in the midst of it, there have been some pandemic winners. We spoke to some of these companies, and to start us off is Zoom, the cloud-based video conferencing service. I spoke to Ricky Kapoor, head of APAC, and this is what he said when I asked if the company will see phenomenal growth in the post-pandemic world.
We're at a pivotal point in history. You know, if you think about, you kind of mentioned it earlier, but the pandemic has forced us really to change the ways in which we connect, communicate, work, play, you know, both in a personal and a business setting. And, you know, as we stand at the cusp of moving back into a hybrid world, I think we have a once in a lifetime opportunity to take the best of all worlds. And I believe that's what's going to happen. You know, we're starting to see an incredible set of opportunities open up around Zoom as a platform being used, perhaps in three different ways, right? If I can frame it that way. And that's where we see the growth opportunity ahead. So the first one really is around, you know, embedding the Zoom platform, something that we've gotten also used to, into everyday frontline business processes. So, you know, so far we've been using the platform for, you know, meetings like any normal meeting when everyone's virtual. But as we move forward, you know, we're starting to see in every industry, whether it's banking, education, healthcare, retail, and really any industry, you know, companies are looking at reimagining how they blend the online and the physical worlds.
That was Ricky Kapoor, head of APAC of Zoom. During this pandemic, I think we have spent more time on computers than we ever did, whether it's just being online or working from home. But this has also left us very vulnerable. Unsurprisingly, Cloudflare, a company that improves the security and speed of browsing on the internet, has been another winner. I asked Jonathan Dixon, who's vice president and general manager of Asia Pacific Japan China, of this company, how they intend to keep up their competitive edge. JP Morgan, the investment bank, says that you're competing in an addressable market of $34 billion. Of course, this is a global figure. But how do you intend to take market share from legacy on-premise hardware providers like F5 and Cisco in this region? Because there is this reluctance to change, isn't there?
Absolutely, there is. And I've worked for some of those legacy organizations as well, so I completely appreciate, you know, some of the relationships they have and the trust they've earned over decades. I suppose we come about it with some sort of unique ways. The pace of innovation at Cloudflare is really impressive. The pace that Cloudflare has been able to deliver, really working backwards from customer situations across every industry vertical. In addition, you know, we talked around this sort of zero trust sort of more phenomenon, and companies have traditionally used the castle and moat approach just for security, creating barriers between enterprise networks and external threats. And so now that applications have moved to the cloud, more employees have moved outside of the office and that model's broken. So therefore, you require a company that has this sort of native cloud-based zero trust approach and that can automatically trust any requests to corporate data or resources and any attempt when they're connecting to the systems. So if you think around some of these old world vendors, they've got some things to protect, right? They've got this huge business that's, you know, they're still delivering their results based on selling a lot of hardware. And it's quite difficult to disrupt themselves. We're a pure SaaS-based company. We have no legacy to protect. And we can innovate very quickly for customers. And one of the other things that I'm seeing a lot that I've been really impressed with Cloudflare is our distributed nature of our network. So as I said, we have points of presence in north of 250 physical locations across the world. And, you know, that allows us to be able to meet in-country regulatory requirements, financial service regulatory requirements, for example, in Malaysia, I think around some of the upstream workload requirements, for example, that a Petronas would have. Based on us having infrastructure in all the major locations, then they can rely on Cloudflare to sort of meet any regulatory data-sensitive workload requirements, which is very powerful for us versus on-prem providers or even the big hyperscalers who build big regions and potentially don't have those points of presence in all the countries and all the locations around the world that Cloudflare does.
And that was Jonathan Dixon, Vice President and General Manager of Asia-Pacific Japan China of Cloudflare. But it's not just software that has been the winners. Even the Penang-based semiconductor equipment vendor and automation house Pentamaster has seen their good performance reflected in their share price. It's up more than 10% when the broader market is still in negative territory. Yet, when Philip Tse spoke to Chua Chun Bin, executive chairman of this company, there was still a timely reminder to always keep something for a rainy day.
Right. And I guess that's a question in my mind, which is you have quite a nice cash pile of about more than $500 million. Is that going to be used to invest in more R&D or to set up all these facilities in these respective markets?
Okay, we will manage our cash very prudently in the sense cash is king during 2008 when we are in financial crisis. I learned how to realize cash is so important because at that time we borrow money. Banker, you know, when you are rich, they come and loan you money. When you have no money, they take away your umbrella, you know. Until today, I still don't believe in borrowing anymore since 2008. What I do, the 500 over million cash that we have, we plan to build out another third plant in Penang. We're going to expand our China plant. We're going to use it to expand our Japan and the Europe and US. At the same time, we are looking at some acquisition of potential related technology that can further enhance our revenue. Or compliment, you know, and because we want to tap the talent, which should be, if we don't have the talent, sometimes we have to acquire company to tap the talent to expand, to diversify. But we will continue to preserve and conserve our cash carefully. We still want to keep certain amount of cash we're not going to spend all, but every year we want to make sure we have so much million of profit and then we spend a portion of it. We want to be prudent. We want to be, you know, cautious.
And that was Chua Chun Bin, Executive Chairman of Pentamaster. During this pandemic, we also kept hearing about chip shortages, a boon to the semiconductor industry. But a good company never rests on its laurels and always looks for the next killer application. Philip Tse spoke to Martin Ng Chin Liang, Deputy Group CEO of UWC Berhad, about their 5G aspirations.
Tell me about the 5G business and segment that you intend to grow and build there.
Right now in our 5G portfolio, we have two equipment that we are working on right now. The first equipment is to test on the millimeter wave. And I'm very proud to share with you that the test equipment, the 5G test equipment that we built is one of the fastest or the fastest millimeter wave test equipment available in the market. And of course, our role is the contract manufacturing. So that particular devices or that particular test equipment is primarily focused on consumer devices such as smart devices, smart bands, smart phone, whatever you think of, you know, consumer smart devices. That is the first equipment that in my portfolio for 5G. And the second 5G equipment that in my portfolio is what we call V2V enabler in layman term. V2V means vehicle to vehicle, or is the enabler for the vehicle to achieve autonomous driving. So right now at this juncture, we are standing at level 2 of autonomous, or perhaps some of the new brands, new model can achieve up to level 3 autonomous. But, you know, the roadmap is still very long until we achieve full autonomous. So the second 5G test equipment is meant for the automotive industry, which allowed vehicle to talk to each other,
right,
and it can drive itself, which to achieve full autonomous.
Yeah, I mean, this all sounds like very sexy. Now, give me the numbers, right? How much does 5G contribute to the business in 3-5 years' time? How much does it contribute in terms of margin and also the top line?
All right. At this juncture, based on my current order book, the orders only achieved roughly around 6%. So if let's say you're talking about with a current order book, definitely it's not huge. But most importantly, we are planning for the future. That's the future of UWC. Whatever result you see today or whatever result that we achieve today is the effort we put in years ago. So we have to plan ahead. So for the 5G, I'm expecting them to be the top five contributors for my top and bottom line. In terms of the margin, I'm expecting to maintain or slightly grow the current margin that I achieve.
So how much does it contribute to the business? Give me an absolute percentage.
Right now, it's about 6%.
In 5 years?
In 5 years, I'm expecting somewhere around 20%.
That was Martin Ng Chin Liang, Deputy Group CEO of UWC Berhad. This is the best of the Breakfast Grills of 2021, where we look at the pandemic winners. When we come back, the next unicorns, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the best of the Breakfast Grills of 2021, where we look at the pandemic winners. Just before the break, we were looking at all the technology companies that had done well and why. Shifting our attention to the unicorns or potential ones in the region, first off was Touch & Go Group, the leading fintech player in this country. I asked Effendi Shahul Hamid, Group CEO, what is the company really worth?
Yeah, we are in the market. We are talking to a group of investors. We feel that the time is right to bring on some more people. We feel that we've created a significant amount of value. So the shareholders said, let's go and see what's in the market. Certainly, the response has been good. I can share with you that we are in the middle of the round. We haven't fully closed it. And we will be making the announcements very soon. But we will be able to announce some things, I think, fairly soon. But yeah.
And the price tag, $700 million US dollars. Does that sound about right for Touch & Go Digital?
I can't confirm it with you exactly what the number is, but if you ask me, does the price tag sound about right? I guess it's subjective. Is it the 600, 700, 800? I think that you're not far off, right, in terms of what we're expecting, but we certainly are in the middle of it.
There has to be some serious consideration of CIMB's management, especially when their own ROEs at the bank are less than 7%. So what is the plan they have for Touch & Go Digital? Is it a listing? And how soon do you think it will happen?
Yeah, I think, so good question, right? So I think if you look at the portfolio of investments, not just CIMB, but anyone with a portfolio in investments, always look at it with an eye of where the returns are going to be come from. I mean, at CIMB, we certainly had good investment portfolios at the asset management company, as you rightly pointed out, and also at the securities company. And at the right time, we felt we did the right thing in terms of ensuring that we balance value and also product delivery, right? And the holding and view on Touch & Go e-wallet company or Touch & Go Digital will be no different, right? I do think that there's always multiple ways to crystallize value. You mentioned an IPO, that could be one. But it's also about timing, right? Making sure that when you do these exercises to create value, the timing is right. We balance it very, very clearly. The management team and the board debates it very openly. So we have our plans internally with regards to how we expect to balance these financial parameters. And those are some things that we work on for the longer term.
Have they given you a timeline? Has it to be in the next, let's say, 1, 2, 3 years, perhaps?
No. No, I think that it's not a timeline.
Or is it based on an ROE target?
I think that it's not really ROE target or timelines, but I think it's about how you build a business. What is needed to build a business? How are you tracking if that business is on track towards your plans? And certainly having the end goals, which we all discussed. So it's not just about numbers, dollars, cents. It is about timing. It's about business build. It's about synergistic value. It's about many, many levers that Rahman and I talked through, right?
And that was Effendi Shahul Hamid, Group CEO of Touch & Go Group. Next was the app of all apps, Grab Malaysia. As we know, Grab made their debut on Nasdaq on 2nd December, but till now, its share price is still underwater. Which makes the question I asked Sean Goh, country head, even more pertinent as shareholders can be very impatient. So where are you going to make the money? How are you going to monetize this? Is it from the float that people keep with you currently and, you know, in the future, maybe even more? Or is it from fee income from the selling of perhaps, you know, which you already do now currently, insurance services, maybe that will include unit trust later on? Where's the monetization?
Great question. So fintech and financial services is especially difficult because monetization on any one service tends to be challenging and long term, right? So we're looking at doing this in two ways. First of all, to layer on more services to the same consumers that we already got onto the platform so that we reduce the cost to actually acquire new consumers. And the second thing is, if you look at each one of those component services, we're ultimately looking at building services that are affordable for consumers. And affordable generally means low margin, right? So we're not going to try and make the lion's share of our margins from like one star service. The goal is to really try and just serve consumers in 5-10 different ways and just make a little bit on each one. And because we're not making as much on each one, hopefully they become stickier on the platform and they're more willing to try more services. And that's how we stack up the overall economics.
So you're going for market share?
I wouldn't say market share because we have very established financial services players that, you know, are very credible. We're looking at the number of products that our consumers use.
Mm.
We're looking at how long they stay, even if it's for a very small service. And ultimately, what that stacks up to is in an industry, what we call lifetime value. So we're looking at a very long-term game here.
That was Sean Goh, country head of Grab Malaysia. Finally, Malaysia saw its first unicorn, hitting the US $1 billion valuation with Qasim, obtaining that coveted status after successfully completing a share swap deal to acquire a stake in iCar in July. This was then followed by another round of fundraising to the tune of US $170 million for this used car marketplace company, which is now valued at US $1.3 billion. Koo Soo Chuang spoke to its CEO, Eric Cheng, in March this year before they hit the jackpot. But from the conversation, we can hear how these plans were already hatched.
Very interesting developments for you, Eric, because you've just closed your Series D funding. I think $30 million was the quantum. One of the biggest, I think, in the region and one of the largest all-equity financings, right? So I guess my question really centers on the key metrics that the funders are looking at. What are the details that they're most incentivized by? And what kind of promises have you made to them in terms of an ROI?
Sure thing. So I think used car market has never been sexy. But actually, if you look at the market size of it, combining the three countries that we're operating now, it's worth $40 billion US dollar market. Or in number of cars sold, what it means is every other year, there's 4.5 million used cars being sold in the market. And I think with the pandemic now, with people are valuing private vehicle ownership, and this numbers is growing actually even quicker on a year-on-year basis. So where we are right now, when it comes to last year on transaction volume, we are at about 1.5% of that market size, which is easily the largest right now in terms of trading volume in Southeast Asia. So I think that's where it attracts, right, the opportunity coming not just from the market itself, but also from investors. They see that there's a long growth runway because from 1.5% this year, we can go to 3% and then subsequently in the next few years, 5 or even to double digit, right? I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to do that. And because the market itself is very fragmented, it's very dated, very traditional. So I think that's how you would look at the used car segment, which is where it presents us even more opportunity, right? Because we are positioned as a technology enabler. So we want to actually bring more innovation and streamline the entire experience to be a pleasant one. And I think that's where all this, investment that comes into the picture, right, is to not just expand in terms of our market share, but also to really increase the capability in terms of tech, data, which plays a huge role in innovation.
Yeah, so Eric, I think combined with your earlier rounds of financing, you have reportedly raised over $100 million, which means that your valuation is at least 3 to 4 times that, if not more. What is the current number in terms of where your valuation is? And what is your next plan of attack when it comes to fundraising?
Yeah, I can't share the exact number on my valuation right now, but I think what I could share is, you know, in terms of where we have raised, we have raised up to about $100 million so far in combined value. And I think right now with the most recent round, a lot of it is to accelerate that B2C offering, which is direct to consumer, selling it the cars And that's through expansion to hiring the really strong talents to be on board to create this capability within the team, right? So I think for us right now, the one of the ambition that we set forth is we want to be listed in the, we want to go public listed in the next 2 to 3 years in one of the major exchanges.
That was Eric Cheng, CEO of Qasim. That's all on the pandemic winners in today's Best of Breakfast Grill 2021. We wish you a happy new year and we'll be back on the first Monday of 2022 as usual after the A&M News Bulletin, bringing you the most interesting conversations on the Breakfast Grill. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.